The Space God Memoirs. Episode 14. The day of the meeting was upon us quicker than I expected. That morning we got up with the rising sun and hitched up the ship to a hefty wagon, pulled by my old buddy Gildar. As we slowly walked it across the streets of Ganadria, I kept going over the procedure for connecting to the ship in my head, constantly running through the breathing exercises and visualizations. .0023. .0023. .0023 kept running through my mind. A kind of frequency. The frequency I needed to broadcast to Disa in order to activate her full capabilities. The shift itself. I made myself stop as we arrived at the gates of the palace. The metal giant's head leering down at us. The gateway opening like some immense mouth. Within it stood three knights. Two of them were quite familiar. Vors and Jettis, who had accompanied us into town. The third knight was decked out in two shades of green armor, and stood a head taller than either of his fellows, also a bit thicker. I guess I recognized him too, Sir Somnar. He was a hard one to forget, and was often seen on patrol in the city. The green knight raised his right hand, and Bird slowed the wagon to a halt.
"You are the inventors,"
he said, his voice deep and growly.
"This way. You'll follow me to the central courtyard."
The other two knights quickly scanned over us and our ship. They both gestured to Somnar, who turned his back on us and led our party into the palace, the other two taking position behind us. Then we were inside, the knights guiding us through iron halls where every footstep resulted in a metallic echo. Everything was huge, wide enough to fit our Rusha wagon and ship with plenty of room to spare. We walked past wall trophies of hoary beasts and toothy lizards, eight-eyed insectoids and tentacle terrors. The prized kills of the knights. Those stuffed monsters stood beside mounted weapons of all make, from curved greatswords to rail guns as tall as me. There were even a few sets of power armor on display, the ones that had burned out long ago. From what I knew, the Ganadrian knights had scavenged most of their gear from the metal corpse of the giant, though they had little knowledge of how to build or repair most of it. We made a right-hand turn and then a left, passing through a corridor lined with tables, where brightly dressed courtiers and nobles conversed in their haughty dialects as they sipped on syrupy blue wine. Most of them barely gave our party a glance. The guards ushered us onward, with no chance to stop. Ahead, open double doors let in light from outside. That was the courtyard, the place of our meeting. I walked forward with the others, my palms tingly, my limbs shaking. The courtyard felt more like a canyon, its worn metal walls pressed down on us, rising up over 10 stories, each floor lined with teetering old balconies covered in green and white banners. I stood with one hand on the newly polished hull of our ship, the center of attention as it reflected the light of the orange sun with a resplendent bronze hue. Rayleigh, Burge, and Demmer stood to the side of the stage, practically frozen in place. Ben was in front of me, bowing deeply to a figure who sat upon the only occupied balcony, several meters above us. It was not King Rudis. He was a waif of etheric countenance, a flimsy frame draped in pale, silken garments that hung loose, with silvery hair and equally pale skin. The young man looked at us without expression, from eyes that could almost be white as well, if not for a touch of gray. He was nearly motionless, with hands folded across his waist. "Prince Ophiro," Rayleigh had whispered to me when we entered. But I knew him, at least by reputation, the youngest of the king's children. The king wasn't here, and he hadn't even sent the heir to the throne. Instead, we had the creepy one, the very same prince who had been born psionic and gotten trained by the Benadar witches. To Ophiro's right stood Captain Bakibra, in full armor. She was the prince's sworn guardian, after all. Four more knights waited around the courtyard, all armored and helmeted, including those who had let us in. I could feel my legs tensing up, along with my shoulders. I wasn't sure how long we had been here since we had the ship pulled in. It felt like hours, but it might have only been 10 minutes. Everything was silent, save for the slight whistle of the wind down into the courtyard and the whispered groaning of the old metal structure. What was he waiting for? There was hardly anyone here. I had expected to see at least a few advisors up in those balconies, if not the heads of half the noble houses. Where was King Rudis? Was Ophiro waiting on the rest of his family to show up, or just sitting there and reading our minds? Either way, we couldn't legally start without his order. People who disobeyed the royalty had a nasty habit of getting their freedom stripped and being sold off into slavery. So we waited, and I did my best not to fidget. Minutes later, there was finally movement. The iron door behind Ophiro's balcony creaked open, and a figure stepped through, its form and gender cloaked in a voluminous gray robe that went from head to toe. Who the scrag was that? No royal or noble I knew would be caught dead in that monk-like robe. Whoever they were, the robed being stopped, standing directly behind the prince. The keeper didn't seem alarmed, so not an assassin, I figured. The mystery person reached out a hand from the folds of their robe, placing it on Prince Ophiro's shoulder. I saw him gulp and give a slight nod. Gray Robe pulled back their hand quickly. But I caught a glimpse of it, slender and pure blue, like a clear sky. Z? I wanted to call out, but... You may proceed, stated Prince Ophiro in even tones. Begin this demonstration. Everyone moved, then stood up from his long-held bow and clattered over to where I stood. Burge circled the ship, glancing over the hull for any last-minute adjustments that needed to be done. Rayleigh consulted her notepad, nodding to herself as she checked numbers. Demmer just wore a bright smile on his skinny face, his tentacle bobbing as he looked over the ship with pride.
Your Majesty,
buzzed Ven, flourishing three of his arms in the air.
I am here to demonstrate to your illustriousness our most proud achievement, the Shift Engine! Lost for 300 cycles, it was the pinnacle of ancient civilization, enabling Rubens and Vulda alike to fly through the air and explore the vast universe beyond our planet. Today, O great Lord of Ganadria, we will demonstrate how it has been restored. Kef? Please begin.
Ven made a clicking sound with one of his hands. I took a deep breath and slid the ship's door open. A clean new smell wafted from inside. I sat down, closing the door behind me. All sound from outside vanished. I looked out at the courtyard and everyone in it through tinted glass. It felt like they were far away, in another world. It was just me and Disa now. I could sense it in the back of my mind as I leaned into the chair, a tingle, like it was welcoming me. I reached out my right hand to the depression that was there, inset upon a metal sphere. My hand pressed into it, cool to the touch. I did the same for my left. I let them rest there and closed my eyes, breathing in and out. Just like the practice, just like Van had taught me. Even breaths, in and out. My heart rate felt too fast, thumping in anticipation. I continued the breathing until I noticed it begin to slow. Finally, I was there, calm. I took one final breath out, and as I did so, I pictured my breath leaving through my right hand into the ship. Start, I told it mentally. It began as a spinning feeling, a sensation of invisible things whirling all around me. A moment of nausea, a tinge of vertigo. Then it was all the flow, the feel of being in this moment, in this ship. The console in front of me lit up in blue, highlighting various readings and values. Inner atmosphere, air pressure, altitude, longitude, latitude, and more. All displayed on a screen of radiant light that to my backward mind still seemed almost like magic. There was a hum, ever so slight, coming from everywhere. More so, there was something like the feeling of being watched, of another presence in here with me. Well, here I am, I told myself, in a scragging spaceship, about to fly. I tried to keep a cool head, focusing on the Vuldah breathing. Steady, centered, I placed both my hands back into the indentations. They were warm to the touch. As taught, I pictured in my mind an image of the ship going upward. The same time I tilted both sticks towards me, just a bit. At first I wasn't even sure it was working. I couldn't feel movement. But then I looked, and I was level with the prince's balcony. Ophiro sat there, watching intently, the gray-robed figure still behind him. I continued to rise, seeing balcony after balcony pass beneath me. Down below, my friends were as tiny as dolls and growing smaller by the second. An elation rose inside of me. I was flying! I was off the damn dusty ground that had held me my whole life. I was weightless, free. A part of me just wanted to keep going, up towards the open skies, away from this rusted hunk of a palace. No, this was just a demo flight. The ship wouldn't fly that far without more work. There would be plenty of time for extended flight later, after we got funding. I wiped the thought of going up from my mind. The ship stopped rising and there it sat, perfectly still and flat, as if it were resting on the ground. The shift engine at work. I leaned back in my chair for a moment, trying to calm myself again by breathing. I was hovering just above the courtyard. From here, I could see the curve of Ganadria Palace's old robot skull frame, the line of ramparts going around it. Beyond that, the city itself spread below, looking like nothing more than a trash heap of old cans and boxes. My view faced north, and my raised vantage point let me see the expanse of dark green forest just beyond the city, and even the edges of that great rift that divided the continent. It was a striking view, but I wasn't here for the views. There was one more test I needed to do, to prove that our little project could really shift vibrations and not just hover. Just like earlier, I told myself, easy. I peeked down again briefly, figuring I was just within range of sight. The prince was probably staring upward, gawking. If this worked, the ship would briefly vanish from view, then reappear. Again, I breathed into the slots, closing my eyes and letting my thoughts drift away with my breath. Eyelids still closed, I pointed my eyes about 20 degrees upward. Shift, I thought, at the same time imagining that very specific number. 0.0023. 0.0023. 0.0023. Then I opened my eyes. I grew acutely aware of a twisting sensation, the feeling of gravity churning and whirling. The shift engine spun the mercury and generated its invisible donut-shaped field. As I looked out the window, spirals of light appeared and disappeared around the ship, little discharges of curious color that appeared and then faded away. I looked out over the lands and up at the sky. It was all so beautiful, as if reality were slowly being pulled away by an invisible force, causing glimmers of energy, light and color, to drift across my field of vision. Then there was a jump, a hiccup in the shift engine. I looked up at the sky, and the midday sun was gone. The clouds were gone. The blue and yellow hues of Aruvis's day were absent. In their place was a yawning void above, filled with radiant forms that I could only describe as geometric, complex patterns of light. The eye of the gods remained. Its spiny form dominated the black sky, a red light at its center blinking knowingly at me. In the expanse beyond the eye loomed vast forms, distant and yet clearly enormous, in numbers beyond counting. Were they beasts of some impossible scale or ships the size of cities? It did not matter. They were terrifying. My prior calm melted away. All I could do was stare at the scene before me, my thoughts frozen by the sheer alien enormity of it all. There was only terror, primal and pure, the feeling of looking upon something beyond your reality, beyond your comprehension. My gaze was drawn to the eye of the gods. Gods. It was looking back. A vision, clear as day, but seen in my mind. The form of a man, flesh like black glass, all spindly and ridged, reminding me of nothing so much as an obsidian skeleton. Raptor talons in the place of hands. His pitiless face was crowned in a mass of spikes, his eyes glowing red. He knew where I was. He knew what I had done. His sight was upon me, a gaze that I felt could shred me apart, body and soul. Part of me wanted to just prostrate in worship, or break down in tears, shivering on the ship's floor. I resisted that through some deep resource in my psyche.
"This is the final sign,"
said a voice, chill and hollow, ringing through my head.
"This world is ready. The trials will commence."
Baseline, I thought, rushing the command into the ship's mind. The vision left me, dissolving into the yellow skies that once more appeared. Within seconds, everything was back to normal, as if the monstrosity I had witnessed was just some damnable dream. I was left with only a pervasive cold that seeped into my bones. Centering myself as best I could, I put my hands on the control orbs and lowered the ship slowly, trying to keep my thoughts on just that, just the present moment. No mad visions, no gods. As I descended once more into the courtyard, the figures of people grew larger. Then I was back on the stage, the ship landing with nothing more than a tap. I closed my eyes, once more touched the handprints on the armrests, breathed out and thought, shut off. My connection to the ship's mind left me like water going down a drain. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated. Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.